Gera can hit them. Did! Oh, what a goal by Zoltan Gera! And still Baptista, yes! It's Kabay! It's fantastic!
One from David Villa. Oh, great finish!
He's done just that, he scored! Jorginho's done it!
Kubu making another glimpse of goal here!
Hello and welcome to the Streets Won't Forget podcast special series, Mavericks. I'm your host, Dan Mountney, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful co-hosts. Two Mavericks of the podcasting world, it's Ben Woolley and Harry Martinez.
He lies every time.
See, I'm not sure that's a compliment, yeah.
He lies every time.
Oh, come on. After this episode, you cannot tell me you wouldn't want to be a Maverick.
Are we up there with Jake Humphries?
you're far better than Jake Humphries. Yeah, you're far better than Jake Humphries, don't worry.
Woolley's more of a Jack, mate, to be fair.
Well, let's get into this because we've got a jam-packed episode. So, for this episode of Mavericks, we are reflecting on the life and times of an English football legend, a man who is adored by the nation, and who liked to do things, I think it's fair to say, a little bit differently. From sacking tea ladies, punching Roy Keane, and threatening to fight Muhammad Ali, the legendary rivalries are one of football's greatest success stories. This is the one and only Brian Clough.
Oh, yes.
Now, boys, I asked you at the start of the previous Mavericks episode, if you haven't listened to that, go and listen to it after this podcast. But what do you know about Brian Clough?
I think it's fair to say he liked to do things his own way.
Yes.
For better or worse. Worse in certain high-profile cases.
Yes, yes.
He's such an interesting figure, though, because he existed at a time of the game where everything was very... safe's the wrong word, but there was a right way of doing things.
It was regimented.
Yeah, and he came in and shook the foundations, upset the apple cart a little bit. It's divisive, I think is the best way I can describe him.
I'm going to come to you today with poor ball knowledge. I really don't know a lot about Brian Clough.
Nothing changes, it's fine.
I really don't know a lot.
Okay, well, I've got plenty for you. We'll get right in with his early career. So everybody knows Brian Clough, the manager, but very few remember Brian Clough, the player, and he was some player. In 274 games for Middlesbrough and Sunderland, he scored a scarcely believable 251 goals. That is the highest goals per game ratio of any player to have scored more than 200 goals in the English game.
Unbelievable.
Bad.
Better than Jimmy Greaves, better than Harry Kane, better than a lot of them. Unbelievable. His career does come to an abrupt end at the age of 29, though, when he tore his ACL while playing for Sunderland back in 1964.
Oh, that happens to the best of us.
It does. He took a year out of the game and then took his first managerial job in 1965, which begins one of the most remarkable careers in the history of the game. So he takes the hot seat at 4th Division, Hartlepool United, and my grandfather, who was born and raised in the town, always likes to remind me how this little tough town in the northeast started the career of Brian Clough. While at the club, he had to tour local pubs to raise money to keep the club afloat, and even applied for a coach driver's license to drive the team to away matches.
Oh, wow.
Oh my word.
Yeah. It's very English football in the 60s, isn't it? No money, everyone mucks in and does a little bit to help even the manager.
Yeah.
There was a key moment in the whole Brian Clough story around this time, and he appoints Peter Taylor as his assistant manager, and Peter Taylor will keep cropping up throughout this podcast. In 1967, he joins Derby. He overhauls the squad and the backroom staff, and in 1968-69, they win the second division, before winning the first division title in 1971-72. That's like Leicester City fairy tale league title stuff. Oh, to come up and then win it that quickly is incredible. Yeah. Around this time, Clough starts to exhibit the maverick behaviour that he becomes known for, just doing things other managers wouldn't, like sacking two tea ladies he catches laughing after a Derby defeat. I mean, what is that about?
Oh, my word.
Can you imagine Pep doing that? Like
the tea ladies are probably the most respected at the club.
100%. Yeah. The very club itself. Yeah.
And he's just sacked them.
Yeah.
That's a proper, you've just been FM'd. You're just raging. <moment
there. laughs> I'd love if you could sack the tea ladies on FM. That'd be so good.
Sack the ball boys way. Sorry, ball kids way there as well.
That'd be so good. Mascots out of here.
The thing about Clough is, I can't really think of another manager who would do this kind of thing or do the things that we're going to come on to later in this podcast. The only man I can think of is probably Jose. And I'm thinking gonna say when Mourinho. He sacked the physio.
I was just thinking Jose, but even Jose wouldn't go as far as sacking the tea lady. He'd at least make it someone responsible for the playing stuff.
If he was about in the 50s and the 60s, I think he would have.
Yeah. So, onto the football and away from the tea ladies. There's one game, a European Cup semi-final, when, I can't believe I'm going to say this, Derby face Juventus.
Wow.
And the Italian side win in typically Italian fashion with some dodgy decisions after the ref accepted gifts from Juventus.
Oh, that's unlike them. They never do stuff like that.
There definitely hasn't been a massive scandal regarding that, has there?
No, they've been in Serie A forever, for as long as I can remember.
Yeah. Now, I must give a warning to both of you and all the listeners ahead of my next sentence, because this is where my Brian Clough impressions come in.
Oh, God.
Possibly questionable, but I'm sure everyone will enjoy. Clough is, of course, fuming after the game and refuses to speak with Italian reporters, saying, "No cheating bastards do I talk to. I will not speak to any cheating bastards." He then goes on to question Italian courage during the Second World War.
Okay. So can get your dar, he's acting a fool in press conference again.
There's also a point in the 90s where he questions the French and their courage, and he says to Arsene Wenger, "I'm not going to have any of your silly shit."
He really is the modern day, the old day Jose.
Yeah, oh, truly, well and truly. So, his outspoken nature starts to get some attention, including from a star over the pond, a certain Muhammad Ali.
And we're delighted to welcome Muhammad Ali, particularly as he has something rather important to say to all Big Match viewers, and to one contributor in particular.
There's some fella in London, England, named some Brian Clough. Some soccer player or something. I heard all the way in Indonesia that this fella talks too much. They say he's another Muhammad Ali. There's just one Muhammad Ali. I'm the talker. Now, Clough, I've had enough. Stop it.
Well, are you going to stop it?
No, I want to fight him.
I love that clip so much, especially at the end where he goes, "Clough, I've had enough. Stop it."
Yeah. I love the response of, "Are you going to stop?" "No, I'll fight him."
Yeah.
Who needs like the influencer boxing matches? This is what I want.
Yeah. The thing about this is, back in the early 70s, football wasn't exactly the global game it is today. This feels like a massive thing to have somebody of Muhammad Ali's kind of status referencing Derby manager Brian Clough.
Brian Clough, yeah.
Like, yeah, it's just bizarre. But this it shows
without
you.
This is without the spread of Twitter as well and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It shows you the kind of reach that even in this time Clough was having because of the things he was saying and doing. Like it's ridiculous.
Funny man.
Very funny man. And we'll continue along that vein. Around this time, Clough's hatred of Leeds United begins. He sees them and manager Don Revie as the antithesis of everything he and his Derby side are. Brian wants to play nice football and win fairly, whereas Leeds are happy to kick lumps out of people and cheat in order to be successful. So at the 1973 Yorkshire Sports Personality of the Year Awards, held in Leeds no less, Clough gives a speech. On stage, and in typical Brian fashion, he unleashes on Leeds United. He calls Peter Lorimer a cheating diver. He calls star player Billy Bremner a cheat. And on injury-prone winger Eddie Gray, he says, "If he was a racehorse, he would have been shot." Now, you've got to remember that he's in Leeds doing this, so he gets booed off stage, quite understandably. But come on, the balls to go and do that.
Balls is one word.
Yeah. Is it stupidity or is it courage?
I kind of rate it, to be honest.
Line between the two.
There is a fine line between them.
I kind of have to respect that he says what he's thinking. Like, if there was a manager now, they'd be beating around the bush saying, oh, you know, I don't want to get fined for saying what I think. He doesn't care. He's not asked.
Yeah, we're comparing him to Jose. I'm not sure even Jose would come out and openly say, this man should be put down. Yeah. Like, outside the club shop.
He pretty close in the sense he called Luke Shaw fat for years.
Did he ever actually call him fat? Or did he say he was overweight? I don't remember him ever saying the word fat. Like, he's still beating around.
No.
What he wants to actually say there.
He also was the one who started Fat Frank. Off his burner account.
Oh, goodness me. At this point, the relationship is already souring between Clough and Derby. And then he's accused of giving legendary Manchester United boss Sir Matt Busby the middle finger. Brian's response was to say he was aiming at his own chairman, which is not exactly a great thing to say.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't meant for that other important bloke. It was meant for the really important bloke.
The reason why Brian decided to swear at him was because the chairman didn't give Brian's wife tickets to the game. Seems like an incredibly petty thing to do.
100%. Oh,
Clough resigns in October 1973, and a month later, he rocks up at third division strugglers Brighton, which is quite the fall from grace. Now, history would have you believe this was an awful spell for our Brian. But for the sake of this podcast, I think it's superb. The team meeting takes place the night before his first game in charge, and Clough turns up 2 hours late. When he does rock up, the first thing he does is point at a player with long hair and say, when are you going to cut your fucking hair? And it quickly becomes clear to everybody that Clough does not give a shit about Brighton. He only turns up on Fridays and match days, and then there's one point where he misses a game to go and watch Muhammad Ali fight Joe Frazier. How fuming would you be as a fan if you rocked up to a game at the weekend? Where's the manager?
Your manager's not
He's
there.
He's in America watching fucking Anthony Joshua. Like, sorry.
Oh,
it started to make a bit of sense how they only won, was it like 12 games with him in charge?
It didn't go very well. I think they lost 4-0. In the FA Cup to a non-league side. And they also lost the game 8-2, if I remember rightly. This was in like his first 4 games in charge.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine being a fan and you're like, oh, I can't believe it, lads. We've got Brian Clough. Like, okay, I know he's...
Yeah, we might actually succeed.
But, you know, this guy's huge. He's won league titles. He was in Europe. And he's like, where is he? Oh, he's at the boxing.
So it's not the only time Brian goes AWOL. For a couple of months, no one's really sure where he is. And then all of a sudden, he rocks up in Iran because he's in talks to become their national team manager. I mean, what? What?
I see.
How old is he at this point?
So he took over at Hartlepool at the age of 30. So at this point, he's not even 40, I don't think.
Like, I guess he's still young and learning the game, but... He's not doing well, is he?
No, to me, this is a man who lives by his own laws. He's not asked about anything else.
I think it becomes very apparent with what happens very shortly after this.
Yes, it does. So Brighton finished 19th, and then the bombshell.
Don Revie, his biggest rival, had moved from the newly crowned league champions, Leeds United, to become England manager. While Peter Taylor decided to stay on at Brighton, Clough answered the call from Elland Road. And so began one of football's most bizarre managerial tenures.
In July 1974, Don Revie leaves Leeds United to take the England job. A number of senior players want to take over, but in a shock twist, hated rival Brian Clough is appointed manager. That's like Sir Alex going to Arsenal or Liverpool back in the day. Like, unbelievable that they even let this happen.
Yeah, it's wild, like, what happens that we'll get onto regarding the man himself. But what a batshit decision by the board.
So, he was apparently, I think, third on the list. They originally wanted Jock Steen, the legendary Celtic manager. And they couldn't get the second choice either. And they came down to third on the list, and it was Brian Clough. You can imagine them sat in the boardroom looking at the list thinking, oh, fuck, it's Brian.
Where he's going to be like, why am I seeing Brian Clough's name on this list?
Yeah, that's literally what I was thinking.
Yeah,
Yeah. How sorry do you feel for the person who had to ring him?
I mean, I have to question Leeds' decision making. Like, why would you even put him on the list at all?
Yeah, especially with the players he's just slated.
Yeah, he's going to galvanise the squad and get the fans behind the team. And you pick the guy who's been publicly slating them, saying they should have been dropped down like two divisions for cheating.
He's already got a sour dressing room before he's walked into it.
Well, he only makes it worse with a number of crucial mistakes in his early days as manager. So the day after his appointment, he pisses off on holiday to Mallorca for 9 days. Nobody sees him. When he does return, he gathers everyone for a first team meeting and opens with this now legendary quote. He says, "Right, you fucking lot. As far as I'm concerned, you can take all your medals you've won and throw them in that bin over there, because you've not won anything fairly."
Shit.
That is not how you get the team on side, is it?
He's gone in there just to have a word with them. He's gone in there just to tell him how he feels. That's the only reason he took that job.
What's the first thing you do when you play a football manager, when you started a new job?
You try and praise them and have realistic ambitions.
And you go, like, it's a great squad, excited to be here. This is what I think we can do. You know, butter everyone up a little bit. He's like, you know what, I'm going to set it all on fire.
Do you know the other thing you do that's probably different to what he's done there as well is you probably set a lenient code of conduct.
Absolutely not. Hard line. Hard line.
This is Leeds United in the 70s. They only know a hard line of conduct.
That's true.
And they get bonuses for fouls at Leeds.
Dirty Leeds. another key point is that Peter Taylor also refuses to follow Clough to Leeds, and he's now seemingly lost without his right-hand man. So he's alienated the players, he's on his own, and after 8 games and 44 days in charge, the players give him a vote of no confidence, they go to the board, and Brian Clough is sacked as Leeds United manager. We could have seen it coming from a mile off now with hindsight. Back in the day, that's massive news.
Oh, 100%. Because I know we kind of change now in football, mostly Chelsea's fault. But as soon as something's not going right, that's like instantly the manager's under pressure. They get no time. Yeah. But back then, 7 weeks was unheard of.
Yeah, 44 days, I think, is only bettered by, what was his name, in charge of Crystal Palace?
Ronald de Boer. Frank DeBoer, whichever one it was. Can't remember. It was that forgettable.
Frank. It was Fat Frank, the original.
Even by modern standards, this is so quick.
Yeah.
You barely even sorted out a training regime by 7 weeks.
You say it's quick. I think from what he's done in his 44 days, he has lost the dressing room at like 10 times the speed any other manager would.
I'm not sure he ever had it, to be honest.
Yeah. So, we get to, I'd say probably one of Clough's more famous moments. The very night of his sacking, ITV somehow get both Clough and Don Revie on the sofa for an interview. And what unfolds is the single greatest football interview of all time. Now, if you were to show somebody this clip without any context, and you'd say to them, one of these managers has just been sacked after 44 days, and he took over from the other man, who is now England manager and led the previous club to untold success, and you told somebody to work out who was who, they would absolutely say that Clough was the man in charge of England and had all the success with Leeds, and Revie had been sacked after 44 days, because Clough dominates the whole interview and turns it entirely on its head with some wonderful one-liners. I think one of the best is when he turns to Don Revie and just says, "Good lad."
Good lad.
The other one is when Brian says, "I wanted to win the league, but I wanted to win it better than you." And Revie claps back and says, "We only lost 4 games." And without a moment's thought, Clough says, "Well, I've only lost 3.
See, I loved that bit. In combination with another that I think was a few minutes after. Because it kind of summed up his whole football mentality. Like, it's the beautiful game. You should play it as such. Yeah. He spends ages waxing lyrical about how he thinks the game should be played and doing things the right way. And then the guy turns to Revie and says, how would you sum up Brian Clough? And he goes, "Brian's a fool unto himself." And it's so perfect because everything that goes wrong for him is his own doing. where he falls out with the board, I think, at every club that he's at, except maybe Brighton, because he's never there.
Yeah, I think I don't think he falls out with the Forest board either, but we'll get on to Forest.
But he makes decisions that he thinks is right, and he makes them in earnest, but they're just, to anyone else, they'd seem so stupid. Like not meeting the club, the players, going on holiday just after you take over. It's things, he's so determined to do it his way that he's his own worst enemy.
But then wouldn't you say every manager is determined to do things their way?
Absolutely.
Yeah, but not that destructively.
Something he says on that as well, where he's like, 90% of all management is the same. It's the last 10% that makes the difference. And I think that 10%, when it works, is amazing. And his career up to this point is an example of how his method is quite often not it.
Yeah, I mean, I think his methods absolutely work at Derby, despite the kind of souring of the relationship at the end.
Oh, yeah.
And they definitely work at Forest. I think maybe just the whole context of the rivalry with Leeds is what brings the downfall. Like, I'm not convinced it would have ever worked, even if he changed his methods.
Even when he's at Derby, he falls out with the board because he's so determined to do things his own way. And you think, if his methods can ruin a spell that was that successful, there's something, it's almost like a dark cloud hanging over his career in places.
Yeah. You are a terrible man.
So the interviewer in this thing is crap. I hate him.
This interview does just show his charisma at its finest, though. Like, the one-liners are so quick.
Yeah, bit brutal, isn't he? He's always cutting. You can see where Roy Keane got it from.
Yeah, it's like Revy's sitting there and everything's like very prim and proper, and he's like, you know, I'm not going to put down another professional. I don't know what's going on. I can't comment. And then Klopp's like, yeah, fuck him. To the same extent in the language, but the sentiment is there.
I have to ask you, boys, are you, after watching this interview, Team Clough or Team Revy?
Love Clough in this. I think it's hilarious watching him now, and I think knowing who the man was. But I think if I was watching this at the time of this coming out, I think I would have probably despised him.
Like, I like Clough. I think he's an interesting character. Probably wouldn't like him as my manager, but I think he's a funny bloke.
Yeah.
But everything Revy says in this is correct. Where he talks about losing the dressing room, he talks about losing the board. All of it stems from Clough and his antics. So it's hard to be Team Clough when you know that he is, I don't want to say the bad guy, but it's not like the club turned against him. Everything he like happened is entirely from him.
It is incredible how he does turn that whole interview completely on its head.
Funny enough, have you seen the guy who starts talking about how funny Donald Trump is to watch?
No, funnily enough.
Like, you can absolutely despise a man, but watching him in a debate is just so funny. Like, Joe Biden will say something really poignant and just be like, oh yeah, you smell. Do you know what I mean? Like, he just says something so stupid and it just works. It just wins.
I don't think it does. You come away with the sense from the Revy Clough interview that Revy's given his thoughts, whereas Clough is just, I don't know,
personally attacking.
Yeah, it's more
exactly it's the same thing.
And points and interrupting, and it is almost like that Trump style of he's not. It doesn't matter what he's saying.
Yeah,
he doesn't want you to agree with him. He's just trying to be.
It doesn't matter what you're saying if no one's listening to you.
Yeah,
that's his way of arguing. It's a most annoying way to listen to someone argue.
Now, when I think I said it to Trevor Cherry actually, or most of the players. He said to me, what can you do that the boss hadn't done? You, the boss, referring to you. And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. Now, there is no other reply to that question.
No.
Because you had won the league.
Yeah, but there's no way you could win it better.
Why not?
No.
But that's the only hope I've got.
We'd only lost four matches.
But that, I can only lose three.
No.
I couldn't give any other answer. And no. I wanted to win the European Cup. I believe that it was just a fraction, Don. A fraction. I don't know this because I've not spoken to you. But I believe it was a fraction whether you took the England job or had another shot at the European Cup.
That is totally true because I was so involved with the players and everybody else.
Good lad. Now, I wanted to do that and I want to do it better than you.
So, by early 1975, Clough is back in management with second division Nottingham Forest. And so begins Brian's finest hour. He reunites with Peter Taylor and gets the club promoted to the First Division in 1976-77. Then they win the First Division title and lift the League Cup. And then in 78-79, Brian guides Forest to the League Cup and somehow the European Cup. The next season, they win it again. That is miraculous. I don't think there is a bigger achievement in terms of a long-term project in English football.
I mean, what a redemption arc that is after the Leeds spell. But how much of this credit are we saying goes to Peter Taylor here? He's the unsung story in all of club success.
This is the thing I was going to say. It comes back time and time again to he only seems to have success when Peter Taylor is there. There's one point we'll come on to later in this podcast where Peter Taylor isn't there and there is some success, but not to this level.
He's going
to
sack the tea lady, fire everyone, all the players are shit. And Peter's like, well, okay, let's rein it in a bit.
Yeah.
Chill, calm down. Keeping him on top.
Guru.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing. Surprise. The other thing that is really, really good. So in the interview with Don Revy, he obviously says, well, I'd win it in three. In 1977-78, when they win the First Division title, Forest only lose three games.
Oh, sensational.
Yeah. So he was ultimately proved right, which I think is a nice touch. Yeah, the redemption is certainly taking place here. He does, however, show a fairly relaxed attitude to some of these finals. So before the 1979 League Cup final against Southampton, players are ready for an early night, but Brian calls them all down to the bar. He lines up bottles of champagne and tells the players that they cannot go to bed until all the bottles are finished. By around 1:30 a.m., star striker Tony Woodcock has passed out drunk and is carried to bed. The next day, they win the final.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah. You simply would not happen.
They win the final hungover as absolute shit.
Pure Sunday league, that.
It really is. But you say it wouldn't happen now. I'm not sure how much that would have happened back in the day anyway. I think people took cup finals very seriously.
Okay, as you should.
Yeah, absolutely. And then before the European Cup final the following year, the game is being held at the Bernabeu. And the team arrive in Madrid to find a rock-hard training pitch. So Clough, he puts everyone back on the bus and they drive to a roundabout in the suburbs of Madrid because he spotted it on the way there and it's got this lush green grass. So he gets everyone off the bus and they train on a roundabout before the final.
Oh my word, yes. That's unbelievable. He's won it in a roundabout way.
Wow, oh, nice. It is just this maverick outside the box thinking again, though, isn't it? Like, how many managers would think, I saw a roundabout on the way here with nice grass. We'll train there.
He's one of those managers that I reckon as a player, you either love playing under him or it's the worst spell of your career. You hate it and you can't wait to leave. I feel like there's no middle ground.
Yeah. Yeah. You sink or swim.
Yeah, you either get him and what he's about, or you're like, I just want to go and play on a pitch. Why are we on a roundabout? Why are we drinking champagne? I can imagine it turns into a nightmare.
From all the stuff I've read and watched, it seemed like the majority of players who played under Brian Clough seemed to really love him. Like, Roy Keane was asked, who was the best manager you played under? And obviously he played under Sir Alex at Man United. But he said Brian Clough.
Yeah, but this was after that Sir Alex released his book. That was the thing.
Ah, yeah, this is true.
So he said that on purpose.
Yeah, true. He's the most anti-fun man in existence. He's anathema to having a good time. I can't imagine him actually enjoying his time at Clough.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, we'll come back to Roy Keane shortly. In 1979, Clough also signs Trevor Francis from Birmingham in the first ever £1 million transfer. And for this historic contract signing, Brian rocks up in his badminton gear, racket in hand, because he's going to play a game afterwards.
Oh, man. He's Harry Redknapp, that.
It's no big Harry Redknapp vibes.
He's got no ACL and he's committed to the badminton game.
I didn't think about that, yeah. So, following the success, Peter Taylor leaves the club after falling out with Brian Clough.
Oh, shocking that.
Yeah, who would have seen that coming? Peter Taylor says he's going to retire, but months later, he is back managing Derby County, of all clubs. Clough calls Taylor a snake and says, if his car broke down and I saw him thumbing the lift, I wouldn't pick him up. I'd run him over.
That's a threat. That is an actual threat.
I know. I know. It's just a man who constantly speaks his mind. Like, I'm not sure he can help he's saying.
Oh, yeah.
If he said that today, he could actually press charges against him.
Oh, that's slanderous for sure.
I'd run him over.
It's hilarious.
Clough and Taylor, after the falling out, they never reconciled before Brian's passing in 2004, which is quite sad, I think, considering all they achieved together and the fact that they did consider themselves the best of friends. Like, that's a really sad thing to think about, and probably one of the darker sides of the Brian Clough story, I think.
Yeah, it is a shame, because those two had so much success together.
Yeah, you can't really have one without the other. Clough is obviously the bigger name, but...
That's what Woolley was saying about how his methods can lead to such... You know, they always lead to a blow-up. It just depends how much success you get in that blow-up.
Yeah, so after Taylor leaves, there is a spell with very little success. But we get to the late 1980s and the early 90s. And he does start to succeed again without Peter Taylor. He's got this new young generation of players, people like Roy Keane, Stuart Pearce. And between 1988 and 1992, they win four trophies, including the League Cup twice, which is pretty good going for a club of Pearce's size. And this is the point where it kind of moves away from the success and becomes more about the stuff Clough is doing off the pitch. There are some incredible stories that I've got to tell you here. The first one is when Stuart Pearce made his debut for England. Stuart Pearce is Forest club captain at this point. And Brian Clough asks him, how do you think your debut went? Stuart Pearce is like, pretty well. Brian says to him, well, I thought you were fucking shit. He then, so if you don't know about the Stuart Pearce story, he's basically was a non-league player and was an electrician on the side. And when he moved to Forest, he kept the business going, okay?
Yeah.
And he advertised it in the Nottingham Forest matchday program. So Brian noticed this and said to him, if I call you out, will you turn up? And Stuart said, no, I won't. My brother will come and do it. And Brian turns to him and says, well, you are a fraud. You see that, boys? Your captain is a fucking fraud.
I've heard that story so many times.
And then Brian brings in a bag, puts it in the middle of the dressing room and opens it up. And inside is his wife's iron. And he tells Stuart Pearce, you better fix this iron before the weekend or you will not play. Stuart Pearce, to be fair to him, does fix the iron.
Yeah. I wonder if he gave it to his brother.
Yeah, probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
Big fraud.
He's the one manager as well that I can imagine following through on the, if you don't fix it, you're not playing.
Absolutely. Could you imagine before the game, Brian, why is your captain not playing? He didn't fix my wife's fucking iron.
It would be so funny if Stuart Pearce was bold, though, because he'd be the original bold fraud.
True.
And I just find that a bit of a joyous moment, really. I'd love to have been a fly on the wall for the original bold fraud.
Captain is a fucking fraud. So, another tale from that time comes from comedian Matt Ford, who is a huge Nottingham Forest fan and was lucky enough to be a mascot in the early 1990s. So before the game, he got to go into the dressing room and Clough was sat in the corner and he summons him over. And Matt Ford had quite bad acne at this point. And as he gets closer to Brian Clough, he spots it and Clough says, bloody hell, what have you been doing, son? Edding pizzas. Again, not averse to being cutting with children. Is that right?
Speaking no his filter. Mind, I think, is...
And there is a bit of a violent side to Brian as well. There is one of the best moments... Also, you could describe it as worse from what I'm about to tell you. There is a clip of it somewhere that I spent ages looking for, but I couldn't find it. So you're going to have to picture it in your head. After the 1989 League Cup final, Forest win, and the fans obviously storm the pitch. They're delighted. But the cameras capture Brian knocking out his own fans with punches. which is insane. One fan remembered that he felt a blow on the back of his head, rolled over, and he looked up and it was Brian Clough who said, "Get off the fucking pitch."
I've seen this clip. I have seen these clips.
I bet as a manager, though, that's cathartic as hell.
He's just throwing fucking haymakers on his own supporters. It's so funny.
Imagine if he was stood in the stands.
He's climbed into like the first three rows and he's just throwing punches, people not even on the pitch.
He's like Eric Dyer.
Bamboozle, lad. Bosh.
Well, it's funny you mentioned
Eric
Dyer.
Get out the fucking stadium, lad.
Eric Dyer got banned for climbing into the stands. He didn't do anything. He just climbed into the stand. Brian doesn't get sacked or anything. There's no punishment. And the next day, he meets the fans who come to apologise to him. He then forces them to kiss him on the cheek. And one of them tells him, "You'll have to chase me."
Please tell me he chases him.
I haven't seen the clip. It's from hearsay stories from what I've read. But yeah,
he is truly
one of a kind. And we're not done there because Brian clearly isn't averse to throwing a few punches. Roy Keane tells a story about how he made a mistake in a game. He underhit a back pass and gave away a goal. So he goes into the dressing room after the game and he walks in, and then all of a sudden, Clough pops out from behind the door and just punches him square in the face. And he says to him, "Son, do not pass the ball to my goalkeeper."
Oh, Jesus.
You can probably understand partly the reason why Roy Keane is the way he is if that was what was happening in his career. Clough just punching him
That's
in the nose.
Yeah, you can definitely see his influence.
And then one final story involves Wimbledon's crazy gang. So they turn up at the City Ground for a game and they have a boombox with them, which at the time is the new fad in terms of technology. Yeah. And they're blasting music before the game. So Brian sends his assistant manager to go and tell him to turn the music down. So he goes in, he says, "Sorry, can you turn the music down, boys?" Vinnie Jones goes, "Yep, sorry, not a problem." Walks back out, music goes up again. Brian sends the assistant again, same thing happens. At this point, Brian has had enough, so he storms into the dressing room, grabs the boombox, lifts it above his head, smashes it on the floor and shouts, "Now play your fucking music, Wimbledon." This is a man who is in his 50s at this point, going into probably the scariest dressing room in British football. Doesn't give a shit.
Nope. Just
doesn't
fuck
care.
Off.
Yeah. Play your fucking music, Wimbledon.
I can imagine him staring down Vinnie Jones.
I really
up in John Fashanu's face shouting, "Awooga!" Yeah.
I really hope he said that to the tune of what's the quote again? What did you say, Dad? Play your music. Can you imagine
play
if just
music
to play
boy,
that
yeah.
funky music wide boy?
Oh, goodness me. Oh.
Play your fucking music, Wimbledon.
Sadly, by 1993, Forest are relegated from the Premier League, and Clough, who at this point has a real problem with alcohol, resigns, and that's that. The career of Brian Clough is over. After all that success and those wonderful moments, it's done just like that. Now, throughout researching this podcast, I am not ashamed to admit, I've fallen a bit in love with Brian Clough. Apart from being a wonderful manager, he's just such a character. And there's something about someone with so much self-confidence like that that you can't help. You hate them a bit, but you do really like them.
Yeah.
Something about him is that nothing he does feels like it's him trying to be the centre of attention. Nothing feels like he's just trying to show off and be fancy or whatever. Everything feels like the champagne stuff. There's method somewhere in that madness.
Yeah.
He's thought about this and he's doing it for a reason.
He's just living his own life. He doesn't really do it for any reason. It's just what he thinks he has to do.
Yeah, he's not compromising on how he thinks the game should be played and how the team should be coached. And you have to respect that, even if you don't agree with it.
And you get the sense that he genuinely believes everything he says as well. Like, there's no bullshit with him.
Well, he did say I'd win it with 3 losses, and he did.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Is it that there is a, I think, a real kind of paradox with him, though, because there's so many tales of the kind, warm things he did for people, but he's so cutting and ruthless at the same time.
Yeah,
there is an element of how much better would he have been if he just shut the fuck up a little bit?
Yeah, but come on, it's the same with Mourinho. Like, could Mourinho have won more trophies? He's already a wonderful manager, had so much success. Could he have done more if he wasn't such a prick? Probably. But do we still love him? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm absolutely choosing the manager who's good, but it eventually all falls apart, over the same cookie cutter, like, perfect professional, no character. The same kind of manager that we see more and more now. And yes, they have more success, but you're never going to remember them. You're not talking about them down the pub for how funny they were. Surely they won all the trophies.
You wouldn't rather them in charge of your club?
Oh, absolutely not.
I was going to say, because you're saying you'd rather have Mourinho than Pep then. I was like, no.
Absolutely not. I think I'd rather hate to play for him as well. Like, have a bad game, you're getting assaulted in the dressing room.
Yeah,
it's really funny you say that, because Clough is going to come up again in our next Mavericks episode, because he links with a group of seven players who would name the Magnificent Seven. We'll come on to them in our next Mavericks episode. But there's a lot of stuff in there about, would the Maverick have thrived more if people like Clough, and Clough specifically, were given more opportunities, especially the England manager's job? And it's like you say, you'd rather have somebody like Clough than this yes man that we often see, especially with the England job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. I do think as well, there's always that risk of they are their own worst enemy. You know the collapse is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's why
it's something, it's going to fall apart. I guess it's just how much success can you get before that happens? And there is a charm to it.
Well, you know, that's why the greatest England record is probably to one of the biggest Mavericks of the game ever, and that's Big Sam.
Big Sam, yeah. Oh, goodness.
You can't argue with a 100% win record.
You know, 100% record. It may have only lasted, what was it, three games? But
I think, like, it was only one game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was one game.
Well, there you go. Like you said, you burn so close to the sun, how long does it last?
So you're onto something there, mate, because the secret to international success is drinking wine by the pint.
Exactly.
I do often wonder what Brian Clough would think of kind of that next generation of Maverick managers. People like Big Sam, Harry Redknapp, for example. Like,
I reckon he'd be best mates with Warnock.
Yeah, but
he'd have Sammy Lee.
Ultimately, in terms of those kind of managers, only really Redknapp you could look at and say, well, they played nice football.
True.
Clough hated that kind of rough and tumble.
Can you imagine him versus Mourinho? Oh.
Oh, man.
Oh, that would be heaven.
Real Madrid. I'd want like a massive, like, pre-fight boxing style build up to any match those two had. Can you imagine some of the quotes? Yeah. Oh,
unbelievable.
God.
That Chelsea or that Madrid
team. He wasn't that kind of manager. So imagine what a manager who's not afraid to speak his mind is doing there.
Oh,
like, imagine that Chelsea or that Real Madrid team just coming up against that Notts Forest team.
Would he run the risk, though, in the modern game of, you know, you see it all the time with some teams who get promoted, say up to the Prem. They come up and they try and play nice football. They don't do the pragmatic, like, grinding out results, playing scrappy where you need to. They try and play an expansive game and they get taken apart. Do you reckon that's what happens to Clough if he's managing in the modern day? Or does he do what he needs to? I don't think he compromises on his vision like that.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, he doesn't strike me as someone who's very pragmatic in their approach. It's his way or no way.
I feel like his football would work.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd have
to adapt. He'd adapt.
I don't think he would. That's the thing, is I don't think he'd change his vision.
Yeah, I think he'd add to it.
I certainly don't think he'd have the kind of complete control over the club that he clearly liked to have.
Yeah.
Which would be a big issue for him.
Yeah, he'd have to do it from lower league and go up.
Can you imagine how we get on with a technical director, for example, or a director of football?
Oh, my good God.
Within days.
Yeah, 100%. I'm not having your fucking shit, lad.
What the fuck is a loan manager? Go and get to fuck.
A loan manager. Imagine a sports scientist. Oh, my word.
After all that, boys, what are our thoughts on Brian Clough? Are we a fan or not a fan?
I think the best way I can summarise him in my mind is flawed genius.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's clearly a talented manager. He, like, his style works. Players love him. He gets results. But you always know that, like, waiting in the wings, looming over him, is that eventual bust. And we do love a boom and bust. I think it makes him that charming character. But he's in that weird spot of, I love the guy from a distance. I wouldn't want him anywhere near my club.
Fair enough.
I'm genuinely curious about him. Like, you know, you'd want to see him now in the modern day. I'd want to have watched that football back then. You know, there's more questions the more you look into the man. An enigma, if you will.
Yeah, are we all agreed that he falls into the Maverick category?
Certainly. Oh, absolutely.
As there is, like we said, there's Mourinho, and that's probably the closest you get to him.
And I'd say Mourinho is a modern day Maverick.
Mourinho is almost a modern day him. Like,
yeah. I think if you look at Clough's time, it's all very regimented, and the managers are seen as gentlemen, whereas he went in exactly the opposite direction and was outspoken and would say what he was thinking and wouldn't hold back and was, you know, maybe a bit rough and ready.
Yeah, and he soars so high. They have so much success, and somehow it always something goes wrong, and it's almost always his fault.
Well,
but you still kind of love it.
He is. He ran so that Tony Pulis could walk. Big up the
Pulis. He despised Pulis.
Absolutely. Can you imagine?
Rory Delap throwing would be his worst nightmare.
Well, Brian Clough truly was one of a kind. And I think this quote from him is probably one of the best we could have to end the episode and sums him up perfectly. I wouldn't say I was the best manager ever. I was in the top one.
Yeah.
Good lad.
Good lad.
It's so true.
Well, that was another episode of the Streets Won't Forget podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you haven't already, please give us a 5-star rating and a follow on Spotify. It really helps us out. You can also follow us on social media. Our Twitter is at @SWF_pod. And our Instagram and TikTok is Streets Won't Forget podcast. And if you've got anything to tell us, do you have any memories of Brian Clough? What are your thoughts on the man himself? You can email us. It is thestreetswontforgetpodcast@gmail.com. Boys, thank you very much for joining me. It's been a pleasure to have you both here.
It's been a pleasure as always, mate.
And nice.
Have a good week, mate.
We'll see you next week. Good lad.
2, 3, 4. Gira can hit them. Did! Oh, what a goal by Zoltan Gira! And still Baptista, yes! It's Cavani.
One front, David Villa, great finish.
He's done just that, he scored! Janinho's done it!
Yakubu making another glimpse.